Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Football Scoop Podcast. I always get excited when I see that beautiful Football Scoop logo. For those of us, for those of you who are not watching on YouTube, it's available. You can find it. Go to your favorite website, footballscoop.com. You'll find the link. We're out there. Today, I am pleased to have college football experts, Zach Barnett, John Bryce. Gentlemen, it is great to see you. Bryce, hostage, you okay?
I'm good.
Okay, all right.
Hostage, dark. Why are you calling me a hostage?
So. It's a little dark. It's a little dark. That's all.
A little dark, man.
We still love you. Gentlemen, it's almost Mardi Gras, which is important in everybody's life, right? Doug Samuels about to take the kids to Disney World. These are two signs that spring ball is right around the corner. And the real question is it? Because, you know, we got spring practice. Talk about practice. But will we have spring games? You guys know what I'm getting at, right? The portal comes back open mid to late April. And guys who don't perform real well often jump in the portal and leave. And it creates pandemonium for rosters. And coaches don't enjoy that. So, hence, the past year or two, there's been a lot of talk of teams curtailing spring games. I'd love to get your thoughts on that concept. JB? I'm going to give you the floor. Tell me what you think about all this.
You know, I think spring games have been so watered down for years anyway that when Matt Rhule made his comments about not wanting to give other people a strategic advantage or let them scout his personnel, I don't really buy into that because every guy has highlight tape out there from high school, or he's putting together highlight tape, or every snap he's ever played is available if he's in the transfer portal. So I don't buy into that notion. I do buy into the notion that coaches are more and more concerned about injuries, or they're more concerned about parents saying, even at a spring game, why did you only play 18 snaps? To me, the biggest issue is look at the length of the college football season now. And a program like Notre Dame isn't starting spring camp till around St. Patrick's Day because its season ran till January 20th. So, I mean, think about it. The college football season literally only ended 1 month ago tonight. And so I think that that, as much as anything, is causing some consternation around spring games. And again, the injury concerns are real. Just off the top of my head, I know Notre Dame had two different guys in the spring game last year get injured significantly enough that they missed all or part of the 2024 season, including Jabron Payne, who had played a lot at the running back position as their third down specialty back in 2023, and he missed all of 24. But the fact is, whether they're spring games or not, there's still a 10-day transfer portal in April from the 16th through the 25th, and you're still going to have a bunch of dudes. And dudes know, look, you don't need a spring game for a guy to know he's buried on the depth chart.
Yeah, I find we're in the process of college football, turning college football into the NFL, and it's brought about a lot of bad changes, which we discussed on Tuesday. But I've always found spring games themselves to be lame and ripe for overreaction, just because we have so little to go on. That we a lot of people soak up anything they have to see from college football from in our 8 month off season, and I attended my share of spring games in the past. I'm always been there, like, this is kind of cool but mostly lame, and if it went away, I don't think we'd lose a lot. But I think spring games, I think spring football in general as we know it should go away, because we've got a situation where the tail is wagging the dog in college football. And the portal opens in December because dudes have to be enrolled in January to participate in spring ball. And I don't need to get into what a problem that creates for coaches and players and all that stuff. So I would love for us to move to a more of an NFL-style OTA to where we don't even really begin till May-ish. And that way you can just eliminate the December's transfer portal window, because then there's no urgency to get enrolled in January to participate in spring practice to acclimate yourself to your new team. Let's push the portal back to February 1st. That way you can enroll in your current school, still take your visits, all that stuff, find a new place to play by May, and bring some much needed sanity to December.
December needs sanity. I don't remotely disagree with you there. Just the academic calendar, I think, is the biggest thing. And spring, being on a campus in spring, is more important than ever before, I would contend, for guys to be able to play and contribute effectively the following season. So
I agree. I think we need to make it less important. That's what I'm trying to get at.
Then one other thing about OTAs is that your NFL rosters don't tend to have as much turnover as your collegiate rosters, and your collegiate rosters are so much larger. And then on top of that, we've got massive roster changes coming in college football this year, as we noted earlier this week as well, going to a 105-man roster as opposed to roughly 120. So that's significant. So I think this spring arguably is more important than ever before because, again, as I had more than one coach and some GMs mentioned to me, hey, there's going to be some pretty good players walking the streets, so to speak, in April. There's going to be some pretty good players. Matter of fact, I had a coach tell me just this week he thinks it will be a significant boon to D2 football because he said, hey, those of us who have coached before in D2, we already lived in a transfer portal. It just wasn't called the transfer portal. So I do think there's a number of crazy things still shaking out over the course of this spring, but that this is one of the more important springs. Here's what I would like to see done more, and I'd be curious your all's thoughts to it, and maybe some places are already doing it. Some spring games are free, some are not. They've gone back and forth at Tennessee for a long time. I think Danny White's about that money. I think he charged admission the most recent spring game. I know Notre Dame charges admission, usually $10 general admission tickets. Now, Notre Dame has done a really good thing the last 2 years and involved underprivileged youth in the community, some from St. Adalbert School, some from some other underprivileged youth organizations. I will contend those spring games are a chance for a lot of young kids to get to a quote-unquote college football game that have never been and don't know when they'll get to go again. But I would like to see spring games turned into strictly an NIL fundraiser.
Strictly an NIL fundraiser. Well, by the time most spring games happen, John, we're going to know about the House settlement. If the House settlement gets approved, the average college football player has got a couple $100,000 coming to them per year for the next 4 years. Do we really feel like we got to use the spring game for NIL?
Well, but my point is make the spring game go strictly towards the revenue share. It doesn't have to be NIL per se. Make the spring game something that generates revenue for your student athletes because – yeah, these guys are going to opt in, or the majority. What did I see? 600 or so student athletes have said that they would not opt in out of the hundreds of thousands of student athletes who said that they would opt in to the House settlement. But that money has to come out of all these budgets somewhere. I mean, we saw Oklahoma this week talking about new ways that it intends to try and help raise revenues for revenue distribution. We know Tennessee is putting that entertainment tax on tickets for specifically season football and men's and women's basketball tickets, an extra, I think, 10% tax that's supposed to go strictly toward raising money for that revenue share. So when I say NIL, that's probably too broad of a brushstroke being applied by me, but I'm saying make those spring games part of what you're doing to raise revenue to help with your revenue distribution, because otherwise, how many schools out there last year operated with a $20.5 million surplus in their athletics? Now, how much money did we just see that, who was it, Alabama lost last year, or Georgia football, or Ohio State? Maybe it was Ohio State athletics lost $40 million last year. Now, on top of that, going into next year, they've got to find a way to distribute $20.5 million. So that's my point. Yeah, the student athletes need to be paid. The majority of that money absolutely has to go to football because that's the majority driving the revenue. But the revenue has to come from somewhere. And you're either cutting you're cutting budgets, if not outright cutting sports and other scholarships, if you don't find creative ways to try and bring in that $20 million.
I plan an entire separate podcast on what I'm about to bring up, but you touched on, John, you talked about how the roster limits is really going to be a boon for D2 football, because there's going to be some guys, really good athletes, who just kind of left out, so they got to go find a place to play. The opposite of that is it's destroying high school recruiting. Like, high school recruits can't get a sniff. And, you know, the elite 1% do. But those other guys who normally would be fighting for a roster spot, they can't get on anywhere. And the D2s are like, hey, sit tight, because we got some dudes coming down from FBS. And I was, they're like, we can't go anywhere. It's a problem. I was talking to some high school.
And to your point, Scott, now you can go to a D2 school, and apparently those years don't count anymore. Unless you're getting paid at the FBS level, then your right to make money is being violated by the NCAA. So you could go to the D2 level, play 4 years, and then come up and be a 22-year-old true freshman at the FBS level.
Wouldn't that – I get your point, Zach, and it's a really good one. Isn't that because those other dudes have not played in NCAA organizations? Like Diego Pavia, it was the NJCAA. Or I wonder if you'll see some guys transferring from NAIA into NCAA. Maybe NAIA, which is Wild West anyway, and that's coming from an NAIA AD that I'm friends with. He was like, baby, we're the Wild West. So if that's already the Wild West and you play 2 years of NAIA ball and ball out, then can you still come to the NCAA and get 4 years? It certainly is trending that direction.
Well, I think the point Zach brings up is they can't hinder your ability to make a living, basically, right? That's the argument they're using now. And a lot of these guys are going to make way more money playing college football than going to the NFL and not getting drafted, not getting signed. So they're not even challenging the 4 years or 5 years now. They're just saying, hey, this is better for me, and you can't stop that. It makes no sense.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, leadership. It would be fun if we had some.
Yeah.
The end result of all these conversations is nothing gets solved without collective bargaining. And to do that, you have to acknowledge that your players are your employees. And for some reason, they don't want to do that. I'm sure it's a good reason that I'm not smart enough to realize, but that's where we are. We're going to stay in this quagmire until that happens.
On this, you know, players or employees type concept, speaking with a college coach a couple of days ago, and he said, you're not going to believe this story. He said, guy who played for us, he was fine. He played for us. He got paid, and then he left, and he transferred out. He's at another program now, and he got a bag there. And he calls the old school and said, hey, coach, accountant says I got to pay $90,000 in taxes. He's like, I don't have $90,000. He's like, what do you mean you don't have $90,000? You got more than that from us, and you got a big number from those guys. Like, yeah, I bought stuff. And he's like, son, don't you remember we had this meeting? Head coach talked about this. We brought in the guy. We talked about how you had to put money away for taxes. He's like, I don't know, coach, maybe, but I need the money. He's like, why are you calling me? He's like, I need y'all to give me the money. And he's like, you don't even play for us anymore. You're gone. Why would we give you 90? Like, huh?
That's one of the most outlandish stories that I've heard. But I've heard very similar stories of guys getting their bag and then not comprehending the taxes. That's why some collectives have good reputations out there and other collectives do not, because some collectives say, this is what you're going to get, but we're going to take your taxes out on the front end. So when you get 80,000 instead of 100,000 to begin with, we're not keeping 20,000 from you. That 20,000 is going to taxes. And that's why, Scott, when you and I first met, I know you've got a business analytical background, and I told you I'm married to a CPA. I've told my CPA she should be sharpening up that resume and sending it to the major college football programs all around the country, because they need in-house accounting services more than ever before. And that's everywhere. That's even places that feel like they've got it completely buttoned down and really have highly educated their student athletes in financial responsibility, to all the ones that are just hanging on by a thread. Like, it's, we'll see more and more of those, because again, there's nobody managing the money. It's a free for all. You've got no uniformity in how much commission is being taken. You've got some collectives out there that are taking 18 to 20% if they get dudes deals, and you've got collectives out there doing the far more admirable thing of taking 4 to 5%, and that adds up a lot. And that also, if you're taking that kind of commission, especially if you're taking an 18 or 20% commission, you damn sure better be providing some financial services and counseling to the kids that you're fleecing.
All right, so let's bring it back to spring game. If you are, first of all, college football coaches, they believe in competition. They want to see their men competing because it brings out a different level, right? You say, okay, that guy's legit. He's going to be, we can count on him in the fall. So they want to see competition. If you're a college football coach, wherever, what are you saying to the AD? We're having a game. We're not having a game. We want it televised. We don't want it televised. We want fans there. We don't want fans there. What are you doing this year? Do you want to do it before the portal, after the portal, during the portal?
I would definitely do it after the portal, 100%. There's nothing stopping you from doing your own scrimmages that you just don't turn the lights on for. I mean, you get everything you get from an evaluation standpoint. There's nothing stopping you. You just don't have to open the stadium and turn on TV and all that stuff. So I would still do two scrimmages or whatever the appropriate number is over 15 practices and film that, but I'm keeping it to myself.
I think that's largely already what's happening. Most schools that I'm aware of do three scrimmages over the course of their spring, two real ones, and then the spring game. And the spring game is so based and so vanilla that you get a chance to see how guys react, quote unquote, react inside the stadium and with fans in the stands, but you're not learning really how much they know the playbook because everything is so dumbed down. I think one of the other avenues that we'll see more and more, and I called it this 10 years ago when he was on Rocky Top, it was like Butch Jones's circus. It was a bunch of skills competitions. It was far more like what the Pro Bowl or even the NBA skills and NHL skills competitions have become than it was about games. You had some one-on-one matchups. You might have had some three-on-three matchups or three-on-quarterback with three guys running routes against defenders. You had some bull in the ring stuff. Then you had some quarterback skills competitions. You had some fastest man, fastest lineman, things like that. So you kind of put on a show for the fans, but it was very dumbed down from an actual football standpoint. But again, go ahead, Zach.
That's exactly what I would do if I was a head coach. I mean, if there's a desire out there to open something up and do some fan engagement type stuff in the spring, that's the type of thing I wouldn't be against that. I would do that rather than stage an actual game.
And, you know, the spring games used to be, people used to beg for their spring games to be on television because mm-hmm. it was such a recruiting weekend. And I'm talking even Nick Saban in Alabama turned the A-Day game into an absolute show and brought ESPN in there year after year after year. And I think Peacock normally does the Notre Dame spring game. The SEC network televises in some way, shape, or form every single SEC spring game. And again, that's broadcast dollars controlling it. You've already said the tail's wagging the dog, Zach, and there's more than one indicator. I mean, how many tails does the dog have? Because there's so many different things that are wagging it here. But I do think there's a place for the spring event, whether it's a spring game or not. And again, you got Easter weekend a little bit later this year, so I think that's impacting some. I know Notre Dame is going with its most condensed spring camp. They open again around like March 17th, and they're done by April 12th because the next weekend is Easter weekend. And obviously at a Catholic institution, you're not messing with spring game on Easter weekend. You got a few people wrapping theirs up the 26th, portal closing on the 25th. But again, whether your spring game's the 26th or not, like that dude knows on the 25th if he needs to go into the portal or if he's going into the portal.
Yeah. If I like my roster, I am having a game because I want to see these guys compete. I say game. We're having a spring event for sure with competition. This year, you know, there's over 50 new offensive coordinators at the FBS level. And if I'm a head coach, I want to see that guy calling it in situations, right? You got to get into a rhythm, especially if you're a first-time play caller. So I want some bullets flying, personally. So I want that experience for our staff, for the guys. I want everybody to, you know, make sure we're on the terminology. So this is a chance to get better. I absolutely would do something aggressive. But I'd push it after the portal, just like Zach said.
Question for y'all. If as fans of the game, if spring football games went away, just do you think as fans we would lose something?
I think that it's become a bridge that, you know, you talk about OTAs, and to the NFL's credit, like there's tons of video coming out of OTAs. There's mandatory coverage allowed of those OTAs. College coaches, the only thing they love more than winning is control. And so they control all the spring stuff. If you went to that OTA model, you're either completely starving off your fans or you're just relying on in-house productions and word of mouth and things like that. So I think there would be something lost, but I don't think it would destroy the sport or anything like that.
I do think you'd lose from a fan's perspective. There'd be some disenchantment with that. Fans are rabid. Like college football fans, they love that stuff. They love their team.
I was just going to say one quick point I would make to that, Zach, that just now hit me, is that how many places out there are asking for season ticket renewals in March and April? You kind of need those spring games to flash a little something to help people say, you know what, I am going to send in my $2,400 again for season tickets in the fall because I just saw this and now I'm excited again. And I do think, like, again, specific to Notre Dame's finally going to have Notre Dame's going to have another new starting quarterback for the sixth consecutive season. Notre Dame will have a different starting quarterback, which is mind-boggling to me. But it's both in-house candidates. And Steve Angeli has only ever started one game, the Sun Bowl after the 23 season. And then C.J. Carr, the top two guys. C.J. Carr is a heralded redshirt freshman who's never started a game or never really even played in a game. So because of all that, I do think that it's important. And, yeah, one other element about spring games we haven't discussed is this is only going into the first off season after in-helmet communication. So how much can spring scrimmages and spring games help schools continue to get their in-helmet communication down with their green dot guys, especially at places that have new OCs or new DCs, or in some cases like Ohio State, who have both.
So I'm going to do a whole other discussion on this next week. But next week, Rules Committee meets, and it's on the table, and I think there's going to be good positive movement on this. Other wearables, like our friends at Go Route. I think you're going to see movement on, you know, players looking to a watch-like device. I think that might get approved. And if so, this is like, all right, let's get this in the pipeline for spring. So, yeah, there's all sorts of opportunities to me to have a robust spring. Gentlemen, I got to shut this down. We got something else to do. I appreciate your time, guys. Have a wonderful weekend. If I don't see you guys, we are the Football Scoop staff. We always enjoy chatting. With that, we out.